Esther stood outside the door waiting to approach, to beg for her life and that of her people, afraid, anxious, maybe even angry. There she was on the brink, about to step before her king, who was also the person of whom she had made promises. A covenant between them as he became her husband and she his wife, and yet the same man had recently deposed of his last wife, of whom he too had made promises, for disobeying his wishes. If not for that, she would not be queen. She was not to come before the king unless she was sent for. That was the rule. And the king was much about rules and order and people following the right process and knowing their place. Oh, yes, I imagine Esther could feel the bile rising in her throat. You know that feeling. I know that feeling. I actually had it one of the last times we all were together. It was March 3rd, 2013, 6 years ago this month, was the day this congregation ordained me to the Unitarian Universalist ministry. Many of you in this room attended, for this was the congregation of which I made my home after reclaiming Unitarian Universalism as my faith as a young adult. UUCWC, alongside our congregation in Cherry Hill, co-ordained me. Cherry Hill, you might recall, was my teaching congregation where I completed my ministerial residency. And together, with the authority that lies wholly with each individual church and the minister they choose to ordain, you charged me to live by the principles of our shared faith and sent me forward into a ministry in which together we would seek to build beloved and just community. Words can't describe my feelings on that day. Proud and amazed, humble, joyous, sure, fearful, overwhelmed, grateful, so very grateful, love. These words are feeble attempts to capture a moment in time that, in partnership with my wedding day to my spouse 17 months ago, is recorded, permanently etched in my mind, body, and spirit as the best moment, the best day, the most magnificent occasion of my life. Words fail. Yet I can clearly recall what I said to myself as I was processing into the sanctuary during the opening hymn, just behind colleague ministers, many of whom I had long admired, whose company I was joining, all eyes in the room on me, the bride, ready to covenant my union with divine presence, a divine presence created together by all of us in that room as representatives of beloved community. I entered, and as the significance of the moment rushed over me, I looked down at my feet to steady myself, and seeing the same shoes I am wearing today, begged my body, "Don't throw up. Don't throw up. Please don't throw up." I didn't throw up. However, it wasn't until after opening words and greetings from multiple people, the prayer, a reading, special music, and halfway into the sermon before I finally calmed down enough to be fully present to the sacred act of which we were committing. Some of you will remember with me the laying on of hands, where I kneeled in the center, my family closest to me, and you as members of each congregation, my ministerial colleagues of many faces well, surrounding me, hands placed on shoulder, and then upon the next shoulder, and then upon the next shoulder, until all were reaching in, and we were all created in this interconnected web of life-giving force. And that was the moment where we sealed our covenant, our promise, in which we, all of us, pledged, as the hymn says, to that high cause of greater understanding of who we are and what in us is true. We would be one in living for each other to show to all a new community. A new community. We understand a new community does not just happen in the time it takes to sing a hymn. Relationship from intimate between two people to wide, like a congregation, denomination, state, country, our world, does not just happen. It develops in the practice of an endless chain of promise making and promise keeping, in the small moments where hopefully you can confide in the other person or people, be vulnerable, gain trust, speak your truth, say, "That was awesome. Let's hang out and do that again." Or, "You know what you just did? That hurt me." And to know both of those will be received. The Unitarian Universalist Association's Committee on Appraisal report that's called Engaging Our Theological Diversity, published in May of 2005, said the following about promises and covenant. Promises must be risked openly and publicly, unlike beliefs which can be held in the privacy of one's soul. Promises are fulfilled only in communal life. Promises require companions, and they signal institutional allegiances. They remind us we are connected to one another in our chosen faith, that we are spiritual kin bound together in an interdependent web. Promises support partnerships through fair and foul weather. The report also notes that in reality, congregations, and I will add denominations, can crack and rupture for plenty of legitimate reasons. However, breakups frequently occur because conflicts escalate without redress. Esther knew she must take the ultimate risk, sacrifice her own safety and comfort, never mind her own happiness. Yet this was life or death. This was a time to speak, not to be silent. She had come for a time such as this. My beloveds, our faith tradition is one constructed on a history of promise, hope, and the understanding that each of us is a blessing and we are all connected. And in that history, years upon years upon years of relationship building, we have sometimes strengthened and sometimes ruptured. We can't point to the terrorist attack that happened in Christchurch, New Zealand, without also holding that white supremacy, misogyny, homophobia, Islamophobia, disability injustice, anti-Semitism, transphobia, among the many other ways we disempower those in traditionally marginalized groups, is alive and visible in our country, in our state, in our towns, and in our Unitarian Universalism. Just this month, an article was published in the UU World, the magazine of our association, and many found it hurtful and harmful. Its title was After L, G, and B, and it frames the trans experience by centering the experience of its white, heterosexual, cisgender female author. Cisgender meaning, like myself, someone that who is born into a body that aligns with their gender. I was born into a female body, and I feel myself to be female. In response to this article, TRUST, an acronym that stands for Transgender Religious Professional You Use Together, released a public statement that was titled, Putting the T First. And it begins, nothing we do will be perfect. That was, if you've seen it, the cover of the UU World Spring Edition in which this very article was published. Nothing we do will be perfect. The irony of the cover has not been lost on the membership of TRUST and our greater trans community, they wrote. After LGB reduces trans people to objects, something that happens far too often in society and in our UU communities. The use of harmful slurs, the conflation of intersex and trans experience, and a repeated focus on surgery, hormones, and pronouns perpetuates stereotypes around trans experiences that devalues the gifts we have to bring to the world and to Unitarian Universalism. The impact of this article will have long-lasting effects. It also goes on to say, in this environment of confronting our internal oppressive systems, we ask cisgender people to listen when trans people speak. We ask that cis people pay attention and believe us when we speak truth to power. We ask that those of you who are cis hold space for us too, as we have done for you for so many years. The outcry was not limited to TRUST. Theirs was one of many, many letters put publicly out on Facebook and posts and tweets, or privately emailed to the UU World and the UUA from UUs of various and multiple identities. The editor of the magazine and our association's president issued apologies, acknowledging many of the ways they and we fell short, outlining their actions to return to right relationship, and acknowledging that while the intent of the article was good, the impact was devastating, and that regaining trust will take time. The complexities of how this article came to be cannot be summed up in the time that we have today. I have brought some handouts of resources. I ask us all to familiarize ourselves with them, with the article, with the responses that came after. You can also find each of these listed on my public Facebook page for further reference. Zier Alex Capitan, one of the four leaders who make up the Transforming Hearts Collective, shared their understanding on how the article came to be, and then additionally reflected on the response and its aftermath. They write, I've been thinking and feeling a lot this week. And then Aisha Hauser posted on Saturday about the 2-year anniversary of events that led to the creation of the white supremacy teach-in. For those of you unfamiliar, the white supremacy teach-ins was an educational movement that arose after courageous UUs of color spoke out about racist hiring practices within the processes of our UUA. Two of the three people central to that powerful work who worked alongside Aisha to develop those teach-ins, Kenny Wiley and Christina Rivera, are no longer in formal leadership positions in the UU World and the UUA Board, respectively. Alex says, I need to name out loud and in public that I have no doubt whatsoever in my mind that if it hadn't been for the immense labor of these incredible leaders and other leaders of color over the last 2 years, and indeed over the course of Unitarian Universalist history, this past week would have unfolded very differently. Because of them, there was a critical mass of white cis leaders within Unitarian Universalism who immediately understood the seriousness of what had gone down with the UU article, that this just wasn't a PR disaster or a media blip that didn't concern them, but rather that there was a need for healing, that this was a moment to uplift the voices of those who had been harmed, rather than catering to the cis people who were having feelings about it. They continue, "I need you to understand what these fierce leaders have done for this faith, and I need you to try to understand the cost." Over the last 2 years, Christina has been subjective to the very, and I mean capital word very, worst forms of bigotry, hatred, and violence at the hands of people who call themselves UU. So much so that she felt as though she could not continue on in her position on the board. A fact that was printed about in the very same issue of The World that printed this recent article. Kenny Wiley, like Alex, is a raised UU, had been giving of himself to this faith his entire life. When he was hired into the UU World Office, it changed so much for the better, Alex says, yet these changes weren't integrated. They were dependent on his presence. And also, like Alex, Kenny is no longer employed at the national office. Alex asks, what would Unitarian Universalism be if all the UUs of color were still here? I have experienced myself and have heard stories that could feel years of Sunday services from friends and mentors, colleagues of mine in professional religious leadership within Unitarian Universalism, where we have been explicitly told, or it was strongly inferred by members of congregations and of the association we serve, that as people of color or gender nonconforming or trans people or those with disabilities, both visible and invisible, or gay or lesbian or bisexual or from lower or working class backgrounds or Jewish or Muslim or are women, when we experience prejudice and oppression, whether that be in the form of microaggressions or in our institutional systems that were built in the same time frame, the late 1700s, of the white supremacist, hetero-Christian, normative, capitalist, patriarchy culture of which the United States was too founded and rests upon, or faced outright words or actions with the intent to harm, we have been pressured to stay quiet with the understanding that we are lucky to have a job in this faith at all. Those who have not stayed silent, like Vashti. Remember Vashti, the king's first wife? Vashti, who said, "I am not here to dance for you on command in the moment you wish to be entertained. I am not here for you to use my body and my being to misappropriate my culture for your pleasure when it suits you and then be dismissed back to the sidelines." Vashti, whose actions proclaimed a similar message to what I hear in the rising voices of all UUs who do not identify with the cisgender, hetero, white, educated, middle to upper class, dominant demographic, and what I hear is this: we are equal participants in the covenant we have made to one another. We are in this relationship as partners, not as servants. And we won't be silent anymore. Our chosen faith, Unitarian Universalism, has been bestowed to all of us, to to all of us, to all of us who desire and seek it as the center that holds our spiritual life. With that, Unitarian Universalism is shaped by all of us who desire and seek to expand our life-saving message of hope, healing, and collective liberation. Collective liberation and understanding that I am not free until we are all free. I am not saved until we are all saved. In this moment, yet again, Esther is before us. In her anxiety, in her fear and righteous anger, the bile coming up in her throat, taking a righteous risk, she asks us, I want you to save my life and the life of our people. She is begging us to save ourselves. The difference is that the Esther in the Purim story knew she had the strength of her people behind her. And those taking these righteous risks in our faith movement today never know if the majority of UUs will be behind them. Because those of us in the dominant culture, myself included, sometimes treat them as our people and sometimes treat them as if we were their king. Beloveds, my dear beloveds, home congregation, I ask of myself and of all of us, when these sacred, risky, and potentially faith-transforming stories and sharings come to our attention, life calls us to listen. Life calls us to believe. Life calls us to use the conflict as a way to co-create a stronger, more authentic covenant, as a fuel for our ever glowing and ever growing light of our faith, the flame of universal love. Life calls us to remember the laying on of hands, that interconnected web, and how expansive that is. It reaches beyond our congregations out to all other Unitarian Universalists. Let us reach out to our fellow Unitarian Universalists and say, you are beautiful. You are blessed. We believe in you. We've got you. We thank you. We love you. Lead us. We are here together for a time such as this. Amen, shalom, ashe, and blessed be.